This is Everyday Wellness, a podcast dedicated to helping you achieve your health and wellness goals and provide practical strategies that you can use in your real life. And now, here is your host, nurse practitioner Cynthia Thurlow.
All right, today we are talking to Ted Naiman. He's a board certified family medicine physician in the Department of Primary Care at a leading major medical center in Seattle. His personal research and medical practice are focused on the practical implementation of diet and exercise for health optimization. He is the author of The PE Diet. Welcome, Ted.
Hi, thank you. Welcome.
So nice to have you. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your story, because I find the journey that kind of takes us from like the traditional kind of Western medicine mindset to the evolution where we're really focusing on food as medicine is really interesting. As I've had more and more healthcare providers on, I'd love to hear their kind of transitional process, how that started for you. Because I know you post a lot of photos of where you were like when you were in medical school versus now. And I think people would really find that interesting, what that journey's been like.
Oh, yeah. Well, so basically, I was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, which is sort of famous for being a vegetarian. And I don't know if everyone knew that about me, but I've told that backstory before. And so I had this Adventist upbringing. And on paper, my diet was really great because it was, you know, plant-based and low in saturated fat and zero cholesterol and all this sort of thing. But I never felt like my health was that great. And I never felt like my body composition was that great. And so I kind of grew up believing that diet was not very important, because here I had the best diet you could have and it didn't really do much for me. And then I went to medical school at Loma Linda University, which is just famous for being an Adventist, plant-based mecca, you know, one of the blue zones. And it's just one of the most vegetarian places you can possibly be on the globe. And so I had this Adventist, vegetarian, plant-based medical school experience. And yet I never really saw any sort of miraculous health outcomes from it. I didn't feel like anyone around me was necessarily any healthier than anybody else. So I left the whole educational experience with the feeling that diet was not really that important. And that actually fit right in with what I was taught in medical school, which is that, yes, you know, everyone should follow a vegetarian diet that's low in fat and cholesterol and blah, blah, blah. But everyone's still going to be overweight and diabetic if they have bad genetics, because their parents are overweight and genetic. And so here's the medications you give them, and here are the complications you can expect. And this is just what happens. So I kind of came at it from this, it's all about genetics. Diet isn't that important, but if you are going to have a diet, it should be low fat, low cholesterol, plant-based, you know, don't eat animals, whatever. And then this is about 20 years ago. I was in my internship and I was in South Carolina in a really rural, very poverty-stricken place that was the diabetes capital, the type 2 diabetes capital of the country at the time. And I'm surrounded by just diabetic complications, tons of pathology in my residency, lots of bad outcomes and lots of suffering from diabetes and the whole cardiometabolic spectrum of bad stuff. And then one day this patient walked in and he, you know, I was so used to everyone getting worse, getting fatter, getting sicker, higher insulin doses, more complications. This guy lost 30 pounds and stopped taking all his meds, and he felt awesome and his blood sugar was normal. And I asked him how he pulled this off, and he showed me a copy of Dr. Atkins' book and said, well, I just read this book and I started eating less carbs and it was really easy. I just lost a bunch of weight. I don't know. And so ever since then, I've been researching the effect of macronutrients on health. And I've realized since then that diet is extraordinarily powerful. Not only is it very powerful in terms of health outcomes, it might be the most powerful weapon we've got. Well, diet and exercise probably tied. But I came to the realization that the difference between the healthiest people I see in my practice and the sickest people I see in my practice really just comes down to diet and exercise. And mm-hmm. it's really dramatic. And so I've just been extremely geeked out on the diet side of things ever since. And so for 20 years, I've been researching it and trying to implement it personally and professionally. And I mostly focus on how to communicate this to my patients mm-hmm. As efficiently as possible, since I get, you know, 15 minutes per client. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of brought me to where I'm at. I really wrote the book just because I wanted a way to encapsulate some of this for my patients or my clients or for people who basically had no idea what the heck they're supposed to eat.
Well, and it's so contrary to what we've been taught, not only as healthcare providers, but as individuals. I mean, I've trained as a nurse practitioner and worked in cardiology for 16 years. And I got to a point where I just grew really weary of writing prescriptions. I felt like there had to be a better way. And my cardiologist colleagues were really supportive. And, you know, they would kind of pat me on my shoulder, like, Cynthia likes to talk about food. And I used to tell them all the time, I was like, it all starts with food. But we've been conditioned to believe that's not the case. And we've conditioned our patients to believe that, you know, all the foods that our grandparents and great-grandparents consumed were detrimental. And I always talk about butter and, you know, cream and you know, saturated fat that you find in steaks and lamb and foods like that. And so for me, I just got to a point out of utter frustration that I left clinical medicine 4 years ago to kind of pivot. And I love talking about food. And I find that, you know, I love being around other individuals. You know, many of the listeners know my story, but I think my breaking point was when I said, there has to be more that I can do than just write scripts, because I had, you know, patients in their 20s and 30s, you know, much to your point when during your training, you said you had this very metabolically sick, you know, group of patients you're working with. But cardiology, I mean, for the most part, they're people who already have, you know, disease, and whether it's acute or chronic in nature, we're just putting out fires. It's like, okay, you know, now your cholesterol, you know, total cholesterol and your LDL are high. So let's just give you more statins and let's add some antiplatelets. And certainly I want to be very clear. I respect and admire the work that my colleagues are doing. I just think we need to have the conversation about food. We need to do it more proactively. So from your work with your patients, you kind of pivoted. And what I love about your book is I'm very much a visual learner, and you have a lot of great illustrations and great graphics. And so I'd love for you to kind of talk about what you refer to as high quality foods versus low density foods, and how you kind of, you know, you have this literally have like a barometer of you know, what is most beneficial versus least beneficial. And it's very, very clear. And I hope when people listen to the podcast, they go and check out your website, but you've got such great information there that's available for anyone to be able to learn from.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I mean, I'm really coming at this from the realization that we created the diabetes epidemic by separating energy from satiety. Mm-hmm. So if you look at what happened to create the obesity epidemic globally, we basically stripped all the carbs and fats out of quote unquote food with sugar and flour and oil. And we dumped in all of these carbs and fats that represent calories or energy with no actual satiety, no protein, no minerals, no satiety. And that was the cause of the obesity epidemic and the diabetes epidemic. And then I thought, well, you know, so we dumped in all this energy and created this problem. How can you reverse that? And then I realized that you could look at your entire diet from this protein to energy standpoint. On one side, you have the protein and minerals that plants are sucking up out of the soil, nitrogen mm-hmm. and other minerals, and making protein. And on the other side, you have just pure chemical energy, which is carbs and fats. And if you try to look at your diet from this perspective, it gets really easy to see what foods are going to give you the very highest satiety per calorie and what foods are going to give you the very lowest satiety per calorie. The lowest would be refined carbs and fats mm-hmm. together, like a donut. And the highest would just be pure protein and minerals, something like fish or something that's just amazingly high satiety per calorie. And you can kind of look at the whole spectrum of foods on this protein to energy standpoint, and it really starts to make sense, like why eating certain foods are going to lead to better outcomes and other foods are going to lead to worse outcomes. And I think it's just a really useful way of kind of just evaluating what foods are worth your time and what, which ones aren't, you know what I mean? And it's kind of outside of the other religious constraints of other dietary practices like paleo and plant-based and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm sure you probably try to stay away from the dogma. I know that a lot of, whether you're in carnivore camp or plant-based or truly vegan or paleo, primal, or keto or low carb for that matter, you know, sometimes people can be very dogmatic. And I always remind people that we're all bio individuals and what might work for you may not work for my body. But I love that you try to keep things very clear, very simple. And I'd be the first person to say that we know the processed food industry has kind of hijacked our health. And there was a statistic that I was looking at in a book, and it was talking about the food industry grosses $1 trillion per year, of which $450 billion is gross profit. The healthcare costs in the U.S. total $2.7 trillion per year, 75% of which is chronic metabolic disease, 75% of which are preventable. And so when you think about it, that's just staggering. And I think it's so important for people like ourselves to be talking about these things because our health has really been hijacked and not in a beneficial way. And so let's talk a little bit about what is it about carbs and fat together when they're highly processed that make them so irresistible and so difficult? You know, you talk about the joke, you can't just eat one Cheeto or one Dorito, but what is it about them that makes them highly desirable, but lowly with very low satiety? So we want more and more and more.
Oh, wow. So for me, I have to go way, way, way back to the very beginning of what is eating. So plants, you know, make their own food. They suck nitrogen and minerals out of the soil to make protein out of. They use solar energy and convert it to chemical energy using carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to make carbon strings of high energy carbon bonds. That's your carbohydrates and your fats. And the plants make all their own food. Animals are only alive because we constantly ingest other living organisms. That's what...
One of the most common concerns I see in perimenopause and menopause is hair loss, hair breakage, hair shedding. And knowing that over 80 million Americans are impacted by this is both reassuring, but it's wonderful to know that there are products available that can help with these symptoms. Divi is good for those with hair shedding or thinning due to stress in perimenopause or menopause. They can be helpful for addressing dry scalp. And have you wanted to take control of your hair health but aren't sure where to start? This is where Divi can be hugely impactful. I love their scalp serum. And we know that the scalp serum improves the appearance of breakage, nourishes our hair follicles, and removes product and oil buildup. There are some key ingredients, including tea tree oil, which works to reduce and prevent excess oil buildup on the scalp, amino acids that help to strengthen hair, fight frizz, which is my greatest concern, and reduce breakage, and copper tripeptide 1, which is a small protein composed of the three amino acids to facilitate a clean and hydrated scalp, as well as hyaluronic acid, which is nourishing and hydrating to our scalps. As I mentioned, Divi is not just for those experiencing hair loss. I found it to be hugely helpful for scalp health, and all of Divi's products, including their shampoos and conditioners, come together to create a full daily solution that helps women nourish their hair and get to the root of scalp health. Do you want to take back control of your hair and scalp health and do it with clean, science-backed ingredients? Go to diviofficial.com/Cynthia or enter Cynthia at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's diviofficial.com/Cynthia for 20% off your first order. As I mentioned, my favorite product is the scalp serum. And now that we're in the deep throes of winter weather, it is so wonderfully nourishing and moisturizing. Do you find yourself struggling to get a good night's sleep? If so, you may be dealing with a hidden mineral deficiency. It is not at all uncommon in perimenopause and menopause to deal with sleep challenges. And we know that one of many contributory reasons for poor sleep can be a reduction in specific minerals that help regulate sleep quality, including magnesium, which is involved in GABA, which is our body's main calming neurotransmitter. We also know that we need potassium to create melatonin. And this is a hormone that is a master antioxidant, but is also utilized to help induce sleep. We also think about things like zinc, which can balance excitatory neurotransmitters like glutamate. And if it's overactive, meaning if your glutamate levels are too high, it can prevent your brain from becoming more relaxed and inducing sleep. And lastly, selenium increases both our deep sleep and sleep duration. All these minerals matter a lot for sleep, and any imbalances or deficits can have a major impact on the quality of sleep you get each night. And that's why I love Beam Minerals. They offer a full spectrum mineral supplement that gives you every essential mineral your body needs in the right doses, all in a highly absorbable liquid form. All you do is take a shot of Beam Minerals about an hour before bed. Don't worry, it tastes like water, and you'll replenish all of your body's minerals in about 30 seconds and give your brain what it needs for deep restorative sleep. I've been using this product over the last several months. I've really been impressed with the improvement in my sleep metrics, which I like to share on social media with my followers. And if you want a simple way to improve your sleep, head over to www.beamminerals.com and use code Cynthia for 20% off your first order. That's www.beamminerals.com and use code Cynthia for 20% off your first order.
Animals are. You are only alive because you constantly eat other living things. You just ingest other animals and other plants, and you incorporate their protein and minerals into your body, and you incorporate their energy, their stored carbs or fats into your body as well. So that's what we're doing. We're just basically killing other organisms constantly and ingesting them to get protein and minerals and energy. And humans and all animals have appetites for basically four things: protein, carbohydrate, fat, and minerals. And you're just trying to incorporate these into your body to stay alive. If you look at sort of an evolutionary perspective, you know, look at our hunter-gatherer past. You went around and you killed an animal and you ate the whole thing, or you found any plant foods that weren't trying to kill you and you ate those. And when you are hunting and gathering, it's pretty easy to get enough protein and minerals. You just kill an animal and eat it, and you've got adequate protein and minerals. But it's really hard to get enough energy to survive, especially if you're doing energy intensive tasks like hunting and gathering and that sort of thing. So we were constantly looking for more energy. We were very energy constrained, and hunter-gatherers are always just dying to find some extra energy. If you could find fruit or tubers or honey or a really fat animal, or if you could invent tools and break open long bones for marrow or break open skulls to get brains or any kind of higher energy food, you would always do it. And then in the wintertime, you know, in the summertime, there's a lot more solar energy. So there's a lot more chemical energy in food. Plants have more carbs in them. Animals eat more plant carbs and have more fat in them. Omnivores can eat plants and animals and get more carbs and fat. So in the summertime, you're lucky because there's more energy in your food environment. But then during the wintertime, when there's less solar energy, all you've got is some really thin animal that itself is starving for energy and does not have very much energy in its body, and you don't have any dietary energy in your environment. So you're really, really, really looking for more energy. Now, I think that humans have always used technology to feed themselves. That's our superpower. Mm-hmm. We don't have, you know, the teeth and the claws and the speed and the strength. But we have really huge brains, so we use technology to feed ourselves. We, you know, learned how to throw weapons. We invented stone tools and then bows and arrows and traps, and we have strategy, and we work together in teams, and we use tools to kill animals and to butcher animals and to maximize the energy from our environment. Eventually, we invented agriculture, mm-hmm. and we realized, hey, if we domesticate a plant and grow a lot of it, we can get all this starch from it. And if we domesticate animals and fatten them up, we can get a whole bunch of fat from them. So we invented agriculture and the domestication of animals, and we just added way more carbs and fats that were readily available year-round to our diet. And then we kept pushing the envelope on basically technology. So we invented the Industrial Revolution and the bulk refining and transport of sugar and flour and oil. And we just dumped in more and more and more dietary energy. And we have this reward system in our brain. Anytime you can get a lot of dietary energy, it's just fantastic, especially carbs and fats together, which is sort of this peak summertime, peak solar energy signal that, you know, you better eat all this energy when you can, because wintertime is going to show up and you're not going to get any energy. So when you can get carbs and fats together, that's what fattens up any omnivore mammal, like your bear in the late summer that's eating, you know, salmon skin and berries. And it's just getting way more fat and way more carbs because of all the solar energy that's been captured in the food supply. And so humans have this appetite for carbs and fats together, and it's very addictive, and it spikes dopamine in our brain. And that's why all your problematic addictive foods are high energy density carbs and fats together. Your French fries, your donuts, your pizza, your candy bars, your cookies, it's all just, it's basically a refined carbon and refined fat together somehow to really maximize that energy yield. And we love it, and it's addictive, and it drives the obesity epidemic like crazy. And then, of course, it's very low in protein and minerals, so you never really got any satiety to begin with. So you still have to eat more to get the protein and mineral side of the equation. And the whole point of our book is just avoiding this high energy density carbon fat together and going as hard the other way as you possibly can to target protein and minerals, so you get nutrient satiety at a lower energy intake and you avoid this addictive combination.
I'm sure by now you've heard me or others talk about the benefits of using CBD oil, and I'm telling you that it works. Direct CBD Online provides natural alternatives to prescription painkillers and medications. They sell only the highest quality CBD oils, edibles, creams, and more to help you on your search for natural well-being. And they strive to assist you in making informed decisions about your health and the products and supplements you use. If you've been thinking about trying out CBD, I highly encourage you to use Direct CBD Online. Click the link in the description to get started today.
And I find, you know, when people are having cravings, you know, if they've put a meal together and they're feeling like they need something sweet or they're not satisfied, even though they've eaten a large amount of food, I always say it always goes back to the macros. And so, you know, protein as, you know, the focus of the most important macronutrient. I know that's something that, you know, you and I both share, as well as we had Dr. Gabrielle Lyons on a few months ago talking about muscle as the organ of longevity and how important it is to get protein in so that we can ward off a lot of things, including sarcopenia, which is muscle loss with aging. You know, from your perspective, do you find that most of your patients are protein deficient? Because I know when I start talking to women, because I work just with women right now, nearly all of them are having really teeny tiny portions of protein. And then they're wondering why they're not staying satiated. They're wondering why the weight gain is continuing. And it's because so much of our educational process as it pertains to foods is we're very starch focused culture. It's like the pasta, the grains, gluten containing kinds of items. And so I do find that protein is sometimes an elusive macronutrient for them, but curious to know what your experiences are like with your own patient population.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's getting enough protein to be alive and everyone's getting enough protein to skate by. But when you're trying to get by with just the minimum amount, you end up having to massively overeat carbs and fats in order to get this protein. And I think that you're never really maximizing your lean mass when you're trying to get by with the minimum amount of protein. So I tend to see a lot of people who are eating the bare minimum protein, having, you know, low lean mass, low bone density, always hungry, eating these low protein percentage foods, and then inevitably overeating carbs and fats. And so you have just suboptimal body composition. You have too much fat mass, you don't have enough lean mass, and you're just hungrier than you should be most of the time. And you can really undo all of that by just targeting protein a lot harder. And I encourage everybody, you know, protein should be the focus of every meal, should be the focus of every snack. You're basically eating to get protein. If you're starving for energy, you can always add that on the back end. But that part's a lot less important. And so, you know, we can store energy. We have tons of energy. Everybody has tons of energy storage on their body. They can go weeks or possibly months without eating. But you have no way of really storing protein, and you have protein turnover every day. So that's what you need to be eating daily. And that should be your primary focus.
Well, I know that you're also a fan of the quality of the protein that you're consuming. And so, you know, I'm always talking about organic, wild caught, pastured, but what are your favorite sources of protein when you're, you know, speaking about protein as a whole? I know that on your ratios and on your graphics, you have some things that are superior to others, but what are some of your favorite forms?
Well, so first of all, animal proteins are always higher quality than plant proteins. Plant proteins are incomplete. A lot of them don't have all of the amino acids in them. Also, animals have a higher nutrient density, a higher protein density, a higher mineral density, and that's just due to biomagnification and bioaccumulation. A plant is limited as to how many minerals it can absorb because it has roots, and it can only get what it can from the soil. And an animal can walk around and eat thousands of plants and just bioaccumulate all of the nitrogen and the minerals and the protein, and you just get a much higher nutrient to energy ratio out of animals. You also get a more complete amino acid profile out of animals. And you also get a higher bioavailability where you just don't have as much fiber or anti-nutrients getting in the way. And so from every angle, animal foods are superior to plant foods. When it comes to the quality of animals, I do worry about what the animal itself was eating. Mm-hmm. And you always want to eat an animal that was eating what it's supposed to be eating as well. Although technically, that's probably going to affect the fat quality of that animal more than the protein quality. Your protein is probably going to be about the same, but you start to get really unfavorable omega-6 to omega-3 ratios when you eat like a monogastric animal, like a chicken or a pig that was exclusively fed soybean oil and a bunch of garbage, versus, you know, a wild-caught fish and seafood or pastured eggs or grass-fed beef. Any animal that's food web base was grass on land or plankton in the ocean is going to have a fantastic omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. So my favorite proteins are animal-based, and they're animals that were eating what they're supposed to be eating: grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish and seafood, pastured eggs are the top of my list for sure.
That's great. And I think what a lot of people probably don't realize is this imbalance between omega-3 and omega-6s. And so in our highly processed diets that most of us are consuming, you get this relative imbalance. And so omega-6 oils are the seed oils. So canola oil, safflower, sunflower, as well as soybean. And so it should be, I was always taught that it should be a 1-to-1, which is not ideal. That's really not what's happening. It's more like a 20-to-1 ratio, omega-6 to omega-3s. And so we're not getting enough fish, and instead we're getting these seed oils, which, you know, are like highly inflammatory, highly rancid, you know, can be incredibly detrimental to our health. And I believe it might've been one of our Twitter friends who shared a graphic on the correlation between consumption of, I believe, soybean oil or one of the seed oils, that it would stay in your body, like the half-life was like 2 years, which was stupefying. How many of us go out and maybe at home we're able to control the ingredients in our foods, and then maybe we're out and we decide to have a couple French fries and we go home and feel crummy. Largely could be because we're consuming things we don't normally eat, but kind of touching on this imbalance that is so, so common as people are getting most of their omega-6 seed oils. They're found in everything, you know, even down to the crackers and salad dressings and oils that we're getting on a daily basis. I did a video last summer.
A great deal about our focus on everyday wellness is on supporting gut health. And one of my new favorite ways to recommend to family and friends and even clients is to consider colostrum. And so Equip Foods has an amazing product that helps to improve immunity and gut health and recovery. And each scoop contains grass-fed, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free colostrum. And if you're wondering what colostrum is, it's a nutritional powerhouse that serves as the first source of nutrition for mammals in nature. It's been shown to enhance immune function, gut health, and recovery with vital nutrients such as lactoferrin, growth factors, and proline-rich polypeptides. Colostrum is a natural milk-like fluid produced by mammals immediately following delivery of the newborn. And while colostrum is a dairy product, it does not contain milk or lactose. So most people with lactose intolerance usually find colostrum very easily digestible and beneficial to gut health. You can use one scoop a day. You can mix it in things like coffee or mix it in shakes or even yogurt, or even some of your baked food recipes. As I mentioned, has a lot of health benefits, including research demonstrating the improvement in a reduction in inflammation, promoting good gut flora, and supporting restoring leaky gut to normal permeability. And what I love best is that Equip Foods is very ethically focused. Their cows are humanely raised and ethically treated, and cows produce an excess of colostrum when nursing. So only after their babies get what they need are they able to source the excess colostrum for use in their products. There is 3 grams of colostrum in each scoop, and one serving in comparison to main competitors has just 1 gram. And research demonstrates that this dose, the 3 grams, actually promotes more benefits to gut health, immune function, recovery, and vitality. So if you'd love to take care of your health, you can go to www.equipfoods.com/Cynthia20 to get 20% off your first order. That's www.equipfoods.com/Cynthia20. You definitely want to check this out.
Just as you carefully choose the cut of meat or freshness of produce that you cook at home, you should carefully choose chemical-free cookware that provides a healthy and safe cooking experience. The materials in 360 cookware are safe, sustainable, and of the highest quality. Their cookware is 100% free from any toxic chemicals, as the company produces quality stainless steel cookware and bakeware without added chemicals, and all are manufactured in the United States. It's also the leading manufacturer that equips kitchens with cookware and bakeware that are free of all of the toxic chemicals and coatings, including PFAS, Teflon, and ceramic. And the best thing is that when used properly, the product's construction provides nonstick properties in a product that can be passed down through generations. Go to www.360cookware.com and use code Cynthia20 for 20% off your first order. Again, that's 360cookware.com and use code Cynthia20 for 20% off your first order. We've been using their products over the last several months and have really been pleased with not only the durability, but ease of cleanliness.
About Trader Joe's, which I affectionately call Trader Junk. And I'm not sure if you have those in Seattle, but I was my two criteria being in Trader Joe's is to no soy, no seed oils, or actually it was no canola oil. And nearly everything I picked up had one or the other. And so it was really hard to navigate the store and try to find healthier options. And I was really trying because I had so many people who wanted me to do a video, but I'd love for you to kind of touch on like what happens in the body when we have this, you know, pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory oils that we're getting too much of one and not enough of another, what actually can happen in the body.
Right. So like you pointed out, you know, evolutionarily, our hunter-gatherer ancestors probably ate omega-3 to omega-6 in a 1-to-1 ratio. And when you eat land animals that had grass at the base of their food pyramid, that's what you're going to get. Or if you eat ocean animals that have plankton at the base of their food pyramid, you're going to get this fantastic ratio. But when you base a lot of your diet off of nuts and seeds, mm-hmm. which is what the industrial seed oils is doing to you. You get this really high omega-6 ratio. And then the problem is it gets incorporated into your body. And you can just look at the linoleic acid, the omega-6 proportion of anyone's tissues in society. And it just goes higher and higher and higher. We see this in humans, but we also see it in animals that are raised by humans. And everyone just has higher and higher omega-6 content of their tissues. Now, to be fair, we don't know exactly the full extent of how bad that screws you up, but it's probably bad. Like, we really don't know exactly what's that doing to your mitochondria and what's that doing to your tissue quality, but we know that it's bad. I mean, we have... you know, for example, in the pork industry, you know, every pork farmer knows that you can't feed too much soybean mash and soybean oil to your pigs or you're going to get soft pork, which is this pork with a really high omega-6 content. And the tissue quality is so poor that you can't make certain food products out of it because the pork is just too, quote unquote, soft. Like the tissue strength isn't there. And that disturbs the hell out of me. I mean, especially if you look at how many, if you look at the statistics on, you know, patellar tendon ruptures and ACL ruptures and Achilles tendon ruptures and biceps tendon ruptures in humans, and then you look at the omega-6 content of their tissues, there does seem to be an association there. Now, we haven't really proved causation on a lot of this, to be fair. So it's a little bit associational, but I think it's probably bad. I don't know exactly why it's bad or how bad it is. And we need more studies, but it's kind of a slow process. So we don't have a lot of RCTs or that kind of thing. But yeah, it's probably bad, and exactly how bad it is, I don't think anybody fully knows yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. When Chris and I were writing Primal Eating, which, you know, kind of discusses some of the things that we're talking about today, there was a report of a Skittles truck that was en route to a conventionally raised cattle farm. And presumably because the farmer was going to feed the Skittles to the cattle. So kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, we are as good as what we eat. So that is why, you know, trying to get back to a more ancestral approach as it pertains to consuming meats and fish that are consuming what they should be consuming, whether it's grass or plankton, as opposed to lots of grains, which fatten a lot of these animals up prior to slaughter. Now, I'd love to pivot and talk about some of the other things that I know that are really important for you when you're talking to your patients about other ways that we can kind of optimize our health. And so I know you're also an intermittent fasting fan, as well as things like HIIT, high intensity interval training, and how people can incorporate these strategies into either their day-to-day or week-to-week activities.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, I love intermittent fasting. I'm a huge fan. I really like the 16-8 interval, which I think is a sweet spot for just a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I don't like extended fasting. I'm basically never telling anyone to fast over 24 hours, but I am a big fan of 16-8. I do think that helps people, first of all, get more fat adapted. Secondly, get more in touch with hunger and fullness. And it just really helps. It especially helps people, I think, who are still eating a lot of carbohydrate or lower food quality. I think once you've hit your goal weight and you're eating all the right foods, it's less important. But I do think it's a really good tool. And I do it myself pretty much daily. On the exercise side, I'm a big fan of trading in duration of exercise for intensity of exercise. Mm-hmm. So I like brief high intensity forms of exercise, either cardio or resistance, hopefully both. So I like high intensity training, which is just basically a resistance exercise with the highest intensity of effort that you can manage. And then I like high intensity interval training, which is the same thing with cardio. You know, you just go all out for as long as you can, rest a little bit, do it again. And I think a lot of people don't have time to exercise. I think the number one reason my patients aren't exercising is time. Mm-hmm. And what I think that this very high intensity form of exercise does is allow them to get the same benefits in a lot smaller time commitment, which is extremely valuable in modern society. So I'm like, how can you exercise in 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. And so we have these tiny little nano workouts in the book that where you've cranked the intensity up as high as you can get. And the frequency is high, you're doing them daily, but the duration and the volume is so tiny that you just really can't come up with an excuse for it. And I think that's the way to go in modern society. I think these tiny little nano workouts are the future because nobody's got time to go to the gym and turn exercise into this giant production.
No, and I love that. I'm curious, while you were social distancing or distancing at home, were you doing your workouts at home or do you have a home gym? I believe I've seen some of your videos. So it looks like you probably have got some a nice setup at home that you use when you're not able to get out and about.
Well, I really just have pull-up bars. Like that's the only piece of equipment I really use. But yes, the gym closures did not affect me at all. I continue working out from home. All I need is something to pull on, like a pull-up bar, and I can do a full body workout, cardio, resistance, push-pull legs, whatever, just using gravity and the floor and a pull-up bar. And that's what we talk about in the book. It's how to work out at home, how to work out with almost no equipment. You really only need something to pull on, like a TRX or a suspension trainer or a pull-up bar of something to pull on. And there's really... I think we just make exercise so complicated. It's just a nightmare for so many of my patients. It's like, okay, you have to, you know, put on your workout clothes, put on your workout shoes, put on your trackers and your heart rate monitors. And then you have to drive to the gym and you have to get a locker and you have to pay your personal trainer and it's got to be an appointment. It has to be at least an hour because otherwise it's not exercise. And then you have to, there's just so much overhead that it basically is something you can't do sustainably long term. You just can't. And so everyone does it for a week or two and then it just falls off their calendar. And then they basically, next thing you know, you haven't exercised for a year. Well, you know, I think the secret is to do something super tiny at first that's really sustainable and you can turn it into a habit. You know, do one set of push-ups every day. And just make that a habit. It's going to take you 40 seconds. I mean, that's nothing. And then you build on that and you just try to lower the bar of entry so low that you almost have no excuses left. You know what I mean? And that's what the book is about. It's this ultra minimalistic approach that basically removes any barriers to entry.
I think it's all about meeting people where they are. I know when I was a new NP, I was, you know, really dogmatic and would say it was, you know, it has to be done this way. And I've just come to find that when we meet our patients where they are, they're going to have so much more success. And it takes some of the pressure off of them that, you know, slow and steady wins. That's a mantra that I really embrace. And ironically, you know, while social distancing, I have two teenagers and my spouse, obviously, and we had to create a home gym. And so I have one child who, avid swimmer, ninja warrior kiddo, the other one plays football and swims as well. And we came up with all sorts of creative ways to exercise with kettlebells and TRX bands and a treadmill. And thank goodness we were able to walk outside, but we actually canceled our gym membership. And as much as I miss like getting out of the house and exercising, because that for me was, you know, a really huge, huge attractive component was to get out of the house. But I'm starting to realize now that I can have super efficient exercise programs at home and I don't have to actually leave the house. So therefore I don't care what I look like when I'm in my workout stuff, which takes a whole other layer of pressure off. Well, I would love for my listeners to be able to find you. What is the easiest place to find you? Check out your book, you know, find some of your resources. I know you have some great YouTube videos that people can watch and get more information on.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, the easiest place to get a hold of me is Twitter. I'm at Ted Naiman on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. It's basically at Ted Naiman, most of those locations. The book is called The PE Diet, and the best place to get a hold of that is at thepediet.com. And I'm pretty much Twitter is the easiest place to track me down. Let's put awesome. It that way.
Well, thank you so much for carving time out of your busy schedule to connect with the listeners and me.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Wellness. If you loved this episode, please leave us a rating and review, subscribe, and remember, tell a friend. And if you want to connect with us online, visit the link in the show notes.